Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Ecosystemic Futures Podcast. I'm your host today, Tom Cook. Again, I've spent 24 years in the Air Force. I retired 2017, started consulting for the aerospace industry and future of work, working with NASA right now. A lot of background in space systems design, development, deployment. But we're talking about how do we do that remotely and in a disaggregated, decentralized future. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we innovate and build for the future. In the podcast series we do, we're exploring these new ecosystemic impacts across every facet of society, from the future of education, work, agriculture, engineering, tech, aviation, and space, to name just a few. And today we'll be discussing the future of work and what impact this shift will have on society from rural to urban communities. My co-host today is Vik Ramachandran from NASA. Welcome, Vik.
Thanks, Tom. Hey, I'm Vik. I've been at NASA for 15 years, currently work as a futurist for the Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. Got a background in propulsion, biomimicry, and foresight. So in the past, we've talked about cities and the economy, but since we're talking about ecosystemic futures, I think people are one of the most important components of this thing. So I'm very happy that we're talking to Darren today about the workforce and remote work. So thanks for joining us, Darren. He's the VP of Workplace Design and Remote Experience at Andela, and has been a remote working pioneer for a while. Welcome, Darren.
Thanks, Vik. Thanks, Tom. And thanks all who are tuning in. So first, I'll tell you a bit about myself and then what I do for work. So I believe that we all have an identity stack or a purpose portfolio. And I think in an increasingly distributed world, it starts from that perspective. And you really gain a lot by knowing who someone is. So I'm a husband, I'm a son, I'm a friend, I'm an adoptive dad, and remote work plays deeply into why I'm such an advocate for adoption, fostering, and in particular, open adoption. I'm a Delta Million Miler, I'm an explorer, I'm a mentor, I'm a storyteller, and I'm also an operator at Andela. So as Vik mentioned, VP of Workplace Design, Andela is a fully remote organization that I just joined at the start of this year. And prior to Andela, I helped scale GitLab from startup to IPO. And we became the world's first company, and we remain the world's only company, to ever be fully remote and go public. And so I learned a lot in that remote journey, and I'm excited to share with you all today.
Yeah. Folks that know me know this is a topic near and dear to our heart at Spacely and what we do and our support and collaboration with NASA. Darren, you've been an advocate, supporter of remote working for many years. I think we've talked about 15 or 16 years. So that was before it was actually cool and before anybody talked about it. Having seen many organizations shift to this type of work in recent years, especially after the pandemic, what do you think's been done well, and how can we structure remote work as we see it become more the norm, or at least more kind of in the news each day?
Yeah, thanks for that. Some context, I have been working remotely, or I'll say across the spectrum of remote, for my entire career. And so you see a lot in 16 years, and we have evolved as a workplace. And it's much easier now than it ever has been to work remotely and work in a distributed fashion. I think the most important thing to pay attention to here is the mindset that an organization takes when they consider remote work. It's most impactful when remote work is treated not as a perk or a policy, but as a product. So organizations that look at remote with a product or design focused mindset will approach it completely differently. If it's just seen as a perk or a policy, something that could be granted and taken away just at the whims of a people leader, if it's during COVID or after COVID, then you don't really approach it with the builder mindset, with an iterative mindset. You just think it's something that's written on a sheet of paper versus a product, which is something that you have to actively build, actively evolve, actively test, get feedback on. And remote work is an operating model. It's not just work from home. It is an actual model that you have to really embrace and look at through the lens of a product. I think the second thing I'll mention here is, while a lot of organizations and people may assume that this is the absolute wild, wild west and this has never been done before, that's not entirely true. It actually has been done before. There are early pioneers like Automattic and GitLab. Part of my remit at GitLab was to operationalize how our global team worked well remotely. So 1,700 people, 60 plus countries, all working in concert. That's a lot of effort. And so what we did is we wrote down how we did it, and we open sourced the GitLab remote playbook. And you can Google that and find it. And a lot of my work is in there. And I think the last thing I'll mention here is I like to use this skyscraper and architect analogy, which is to say, if you were building a co-located company where everyone was marching into the same office every day to get work done, you would certainly hire a professional architect. You would certainly hire an interior design team. There are all sorts of professionals that you would tap into to make sure that the hallways were a certain way, that the lighting was a certain way, that the HVAC, the badging, the security, the brand of coffee, you name it. There's a lot of things that you would make sure that you had the right experience on board when you were building that. For many companies who have transitioned to remote, they have not employed the same architect, the same designer. And the truth is, virtual teams or remote teams, they still work in a skyscraper, but it's borderless, it's invisible, but it's still very, very important. And so part of my role is the chief architect, if you will, of operationalizing remote work. And there's a lot of nuance that goes into that. And so the best companies will hire a person, or if not an entire team, to really focus on the remote experience, from tooling to training, all the way through to transformation.
So it's really fascinating. In the aerospace industry, which I've been a part of for over two decades, mentioned before, the folks that are there, there's not one building or one group of people that, you know, are typically responsible for getting a product done, right? It's a team of teams. They're typically geographically not co-located. They're all over. Some of these larger defense programs, especially, you have folks in all 50 states that are supporting the effort. So in your mind, what's different from people working in the past and still in a distributed way where not all of their organization sits in California or sits in Texas or Florida? And why is that kind of mentally hard for them to kind of wrap their heads around when they've been working in a distributed way previously, but now how's that differ in your definition of remote and in that architecting you're talking about?
I think it's useful to understand the paradigm of remote work we're in now, and the one that I think people are increasingly pushing organizations to get closer to. So the current state of remote work is geographic independence. So COVID taught a lot of organizations how to decouple the results that they drive from anyone's physical geography. But the next frontier of remote work is time independence. How do we decouple business results from linear space and time and enable people to work on their peak productivity curve, not within a rigid 9-to-5 based on the local time zone? And what you've seen is that pre-pandemic, even organizations that were leaning into distributed work were still largely working office first. They were just enabling people to work office first remotely. There's a big difference between working office first remotely and working remote first. This is getting rid of all physical whiteboards and embracing a digital tool like Miro or Mural. These are deliberate actions when you look at your tool stack of getting rid of tools that would be exclusionary to anyone that's not in the office, investing in tools that enable collaboration across time zones, and then investing in the learning and development, the upskilling, the training, the cultural change that goes along with that, so that people literally think about how they collaborate and how they get work done in a very different way. I'm sure this audience has heard the word async or asynchronous. That is really at the forefront of what this next frontier is. How do we do work differently such that as many components as possible can be done without needing two people online at the same time? This is the future, but we're at the earliest stages of that. And I think that's why you feel a lot of friction. There's still not a perfect tool stack for doing that. You're still working with people that have mindsets that are cemented in the office first, synchronous first way of working. And frankly, there are some industries or some projects where that's just the most efficient, best way to get something done. And so we're still calibrating on how do we use these two worlds? How do we make those two worlds intersect in the most effective way?
So is there any, to that point, are there any common pitfalls that you advise companies not doing when it comes to remote work then?
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Yeah, I was trying to speak, but I was muted. Sorry for that. Yeah, in the previous snippet, that you talked about the role of an architect in relationship to a skyscraper, for example. If you look at modern teams, an architect to construction or a UX team to product development, these are all still things that these groups are trying to fight for to make their way into the group to show relevance. So I'm wondering, in that context, what advice would you give to an HR group in terms of the kinds of skills they need to design for this remote workforce?
Such a good question. I've often said that the skill of low context communication will be the most advantageous on a resume for at least the next 10 or 15 years. Low context communication is a bit of a paradox. It means that you are able to communicate with extremely high precision, assuming that the receiver of that information has low to no context. So if you can communicate in a way that enables people to loop themselves into a project or bring themselves up to speed without needing a meeting or a synchronous touch point, this creates massive acceleration across the team. It reduces information silos. It reduces miscommunication. It enables much faster decision velocity because the trust in the data or the information is much, much higher. And what's interesting about this is that it really all boils down to communication, which is not a remote skill. It is a life skill. And in fact, when you think about civilization as a whole, the best civilizations have moved themselves forward by expertly documenting and expertly communicating and adding taxonomy to the ebbs and flows of how we operate as a team. And so in an interesting way, it's history repeating itself. But in a co-located company, you can get away with subpar communication because you can force people into a physical environment that acts as a band-aid to bridge that communication gap. But when you're working across time zones and you can't guarantee that you can get people online at the same time, this becomes much more vital to effective teamwork.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead, Tom.
I was just thinking that when you said that, though, it reminded me of what I was seeing in people's frustration before the pandemic in co-located work. And you would hear those frustrations of, well, why do we have to have another meeting? Like, just let us do our work. Let's just focus on that. And so by architecting, to Vic's point and your point of better communication skills, more pointed communication that's low context, I think that would help people that have to remain co-located, right? Those skill sets, like you said, aren't just to remote, but I think you're pointing out that maybe we've been kind of subpar in that area because of the band-aid that we have of requiring everyone to be together. But the band-aid has been an inefficient one in that we have to have a lot of meetings to really communicate really what we mean and really communicate it effectively. And then people are like, well, why did we just take 4 hours to do that when we could have done that outside of a meeting or outside of a sync type of environment? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's accurate. And I think a lot of companies are really lacking two key ingredients to make that transition. One is the infrastructure, the tooling. You need a knowledge management system, a single source of truth, a central hub that can effectively take the place of meetings. You can't just tell everyone, hey, cancel all of your recurring meetings, get all of this time back, and then give them no tooling replacement. And the second part is the training and upskilling. You have people that have 20, 30, 40 years of experience verbalizing their way through work. They've literally never been taught to communicate in this way. It's a completely different and new skill. And a lot of learning and development organizations or functions, I think you're at the tip of the spear. This is an amazing time to build programs that teach people these skills that enable them to work differently and communicate differently. I just saw today being the day that we're recording this, that Mark Zuckerberg pointed out that on the whole, remote engineers were performing less well than engineers that came on in person. And he was looking at the time during COVID. And what is fascinating about seeing these arguments is it is essentially an admission of the company that they are not investing in tooling, training, and transformation to enable engineers to perform better remotely. So I think when leaders put things out there like this, they think that it's an indictment on remote work, but it's actually an indictment on their own operations and their lack of evolution. Because someone can only perform as well as the system that they are performing with it. And that is where the opportunity is. So much of this narrative is fixated on the where and where people are. But the real magic is in the how. How does work happen?
Well, Darren, are you suggesting that HR groups maybe focus also, there's the upskilling part, but would you also suggest somebody who's skilled at creating this kind of an infrastructure, like a chief of remote or something akin to that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a huge advocate of hiring for this. And why would I suggest that? Well, in any business function, if you want it done well, you hire someone to lead it. I think there was a point in time where the communications of an organization was simply a line item on the chief marketing officer remit. And at some point, we all agreed that communication was way too important to let it just be a line item. And so now you have chief communications officer. The same could be said for diversity. There are many, many examples of this. And I do believe that organizations will do better if they hire someone to really steward this change. And that requires executive understanding and buy-in of the gravity of this change. Remote work is not just a policy that can be assigned to an HR department. It is a complete re-architecting of how you think about work. I call this the fax machine moment of the workplace. There were a lot of recruiting leaders back in the day that said, hey, our processes are dialed in just perfectly with the fax machine. We're not going to embrace things like Greenhouse and SaaS tools and email. And you can see how well that aged for them. It is time to evolve and really appreciate this for what it is. And I also look at this through the lens of opportunity instead of fear. Is it a sudden and dramatic change? Absolutely. But I can't think of a time where we've had a greater permission slip to truly challenge the status quo and do things differently than right now.
Do you think that the network of network, the team of teams, the system of systems, and the greater interconnectedness, that to me isn't going to go away because people have found value in those models? And for the folks that, like you're saying, that maybe pushing back on the dilemma whether it's better for them to be co-located or remote, it really is fascinating to me because I imagine that some of those same folks that are providing some of these arguments have been using developers in other time zones, right, to help support their initiatives and their efforts. So as far as, like, we talked with another guest not too long ago about the science of systems, what you almost start to sound like at this point, Darren, is someone that's advocating for approaching this from a scientific view on how do you enhance the system performance and system design. And knowing that just like we've distributed work previously, and we've used fax machines to do that, and we've used email, right, to do that, those continue to show that we continue to get more efficient time after time with technological advance than what we had before. And all we're talking about here is just how we are seeing the technological advancements allowing us to, again, to accelerate work. ChatGPT has been in the news, right? Is ChatGPT going to be more effective as a communicator than your actual leader of the work? Are they going to be able to break down? Is ChatGPT going to break down the work packages better and be able to more clearly assign work? I think that's what we're really driving at, is what is this technological change going to shift? I always use this data point all the time. There's only 49 companies still in the Fortune 500 since they started keeping the Fortune 500 in the 1970s. So this economic destruction, this creative destruction that happens, there's a very few that are able to withstand that and still survive in the same form over the course of the technological advancements we've seen over the decades. Any thoughts there?
I love that framework. Remote. So in your part, remote is a technology. Imagine if we were talking about ChatGPT from the lens of, do I like talking with people better or ChatGPT better? That's essentially what a lot of people are doing with remote. Do I like remote better or do I like in-office better? It's just fundamentally the wrong conversation. You look at systems design. We have built much better, more efficient, more productive, more enjoyable, more fulfilling physical spaces with systems design thinking. At the end of the day, it's four walls and a roof, but the buildings that we build today look much differently, are much, much different than buildings built 200 years ago. And a lot of that is the design thinking. And so I love that. I love seeing remote as a technology that's something that you have to incubate and that you can put design thinking to. I think one of the biggest missteps is a lot of organizations going suddenly remote. And I get it. That was a difficult transition to make, when not one that they chose. But I call it the copy and paste phenomenon, where they went remote and they just tried to copy the physical office into the virtual world. And after 2 or 3 years, they're wondering why they don't love it as much. It's because you can make it work, but you're not optimizing for the new environment. You're not auditing what tools you're using. You're not asking yourselves, how are people communicating? How are they building bonds? It's a technology. You have to treat it as such.
Tom, you mentioned post-COVID and this remote work sticking, and the analogy to the technology seems to be interesting. So along those lines, how much of this do you think is transitory, and because of the increased power of the worker, considering we had record low unemployment, and how much of this is actually going to live beyond the economic cycle?
Yeah, great question. I truly believe that this is the greatest transfer of institutional power that any of us have seen in our lifetimes. People have had 2+ years, well, people in certain industries, I'll say, have had 2+ years of a glimpse of freedom and agency and autonomy that once you see it, you cannot unsee it. And talented people will not just relinquish that. You're seeing it play out all over the world with organizations that have refused to invest in building a different or better workplace. And they cope with that by forcing people back into the office. People are leaving en masse. They've seen what a different and better life looks like. And so they're willing to take their skills and partner with an organization that is more values aligned, that's actually investing in creating a place where they can do work differently. Nick Bloom from Stanford has some phenomenal data on, will a recession change this? How much of this is permanent? And he believes that we've reached somewhat of a state of equilibrium, and there's no going back entirely to the way things were. And it's because it is a very unique win-win-win. So the organization can save on cost, and they become much more durable and resilient because they've decoupled the results they drive from physical geography. So even when you think about things like geopolitical crisis in a very specific city, the more distributed you are, the less likely you are to be adversely affected by something like this. Then on the human side of it, people have more agency and more autonomy. They can rest. They can engage with their community. I go back to initially that purpose portfolio. Work is only an asset in everyone's purpose portfolio. And so remote work, if done well, enables people to invest in those other assets within the purpose portfolio. Inevitably, that flows back into the organization in the form of happiness, fulfillment, productivity. And then the last part is it enables people to just optimize their lives differently. And so from a municipal standpoint, it enables small and mid-sized towns all over the world that may not have had the same attraction or pull as a Los Angeles or a Singapore or a New York, it enables them to suddenly be competitive because they are competing for people based on which city is the most livable versus which city has the most power to lobby for a new skyscraper. It changes the dynamics across all fronts, and it's one of those unique win-win-win moments.
Yeah,
interesting. So the distributed workforce has a resilience benefit for organizations, and it has a personal well-being benefit for the workers. So it almost seems like we should be pushing towards distributed cities. So it's a topic that we were talking about in a previous podcast on the future of cities, and we were talking about how cities have elasticity, and even though COVID saw a migration of people to rural areas and basically out of the urban environment, people had to come back because the infrastructure and services weren't available. It almost seems like there's a business case focus on building that infrastructure and that service network outside of the big city so that people can be more distributed. And I wonder if there's other advantages to being geographically distributed.
Yeah, they're numerous. From a company standpoint, the greater diversity of geography that's on your team, the more diverse perspective pours into your product. And this is the kind of diversity that cannot be manufactured. If you have people in seven different countries on your team, they are living and breathing that country, those holidays, that culture, the politics, the infrastructure, the electricity grid. They're on the ground. They're in the field. And so that pours back into checks and balances within the products and technology that you buy. I really believe that geographic diversity will be a metric that many organizations begin to track. There are plenty of awesome diversity metrics that organizations already track, but pre-COVID, I didn't hear of any that tracked geographic diversity. I do think that will be a key indicator going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we've been pitching that to our clients as well, that, hey, why focus on just what talent you can try to attract to California or Houston or Florida? That's leaving out really talented folks that don't want to leave Minnesota or North Dakota. And if we want to have a whole of country approach, and our teammates, our allies, our partners we work with for defense space capabilities, commercial space capabilities are going to be, if we get to a self-sustaining commercial space economy, which I still hope we get to in our lifetime, it's going to require a global approach because it's going to require global markets, right? For folks to get to self-sustaining commercial space economy, it's not just relying on NASA and DOD. But with regard to the disagreement there that we've had in the past is kind of what you brought up just a little bit ago about values and culture. A lot of the folks say, well, we need folks that understand and appreciate and can be part of our culture, right? And what you brought up just earlier with values is if we can get our values in alignment, and that can be our diverse values in alignment, which is, I think, a good goal, right? And provides better products and outcomes, then culture will follow. And so this idea, and I just want to make one other point here from a data standpoint, almost 90% of DOD space funding goes to the Space Systems Command in LA, which means the preponderance of the economic impact is on a very homogeneous population that resides right around that base, right, in LA. And so if we want to truly have diversity of opportunity and outcome based on the investments that these space companies are making and our space industry is making, well, we're seeing a preponderance of that opportunity only going in one spot. And we're not geographically looking at this from a diversity standpoint. So I guess a couple things there. The values and cultures, what I really want to get back to is a lot of the folks say, well, I agree with all this, but I just can't get them to integrate into our culture like we need to.
Love that. So I'll start with the second one first. So what if we built an organization that did not support diversity of equipment? So imagine you're looking for a new role and you meet this company and they say, well, we don't support phones or laptops. We only do desktops here. The only way you can get work done is if you commute into this office and interface with this machine that is literally plugged into the wall. That's not going to age well. I mean, imagine being an organization today and not supporting laptops in the field. Very soon, the same analogy will be true for talent. It will be just as absurd to think that you have to relocate, uproot your entire family, wave goodbye to your community, to go interface with people and technology in another place when we've invented the internet, we've invented these tools, and we figured out how to use them. It's not quite that absurd yet, but I have a four-year-old, and something tells me by the time he enters the workforce, it will be exactly that absurd. Now, to the first point on culture and values, great remote teams hire for values fit, not culture fit. And here's the difference. If you are crystal clear about your values, which are fortified by operating principles, the literal behaviors that you expect when people collaborate and they share information. If you can get alignment on that, when people self-select into your organization and they become values aligned, the culture almost takes care of itself. In fact, it enables people to be what I call a culture add. I would argue that you don't want people to fit in the culture. You want them to add, continually raise the bar. But you hamper people on that front. It's hard for them to raise the bar culturally if there's disagreement from a values perspective. And I think it's more critical than ever for people leaders to really audit their values and really ask what the sub-values or operating principles are. I want to leave you with a tangible example on that. If you Google the GitLab values, it's an open source, transparent company, so they're available for everyone to see. One of my favorite ones while I was working there was short toes. This was an operating principle within the collaboration value. And what it meant was if you are putting forth a proposal, you have to collaborate with short toes. That means anyone from any function can provide input on your proposal, and they're not stepping on your toes. You have to collaborate with short toes. And everyone gets this. When you articulate it, you think, oh, I get it. I know what it feels like to collaborate with someone with no ego and short toes. And I also know what it feels like to attempt to collaborate with someone that has long toes and they're very easily stepped on. These are the nuanced details that scale across time zones. They scale across oceans. They scale across language and individual country cultures. But you have to be explicit. One of the secret sauces of making a great remote team is everything which is implicit, you must convert to explicit. There is no such thing as osmosis or tacit knowledge. You have to make it explicit. And something as silly as short toes, you would think, oh, people will get it if they work here long enough. Why would I write that down? Well, because it gives them a massive accelerant, a massive advantage on understanding what it's like to work there if you do take the effort to write it down.
Speaking of values, Darren, so on the flip side of it, there's people who think that there are these shortcomings of remote. Like, for example, you miss out on mentoring opportunities or the opportunities you get from walking down the corridor and someone pulling you in, especially for early career employees, perhaps. There's water cooler talk, happy hours, that kind of stuff. So what would you say to these quote-unquote
The first thing I would say here is, in the future, I think workplace culture will largely be built outside of the office. And this is quite the paradox for people leaders who have leaned heavily on in-person happy hours and then Zoom happy hours, basically these forced interactions between people. In the future, I believe that people will be focused more on selecting workplaces that make it very efficient for them to get work done, contribute, and make an impact. And this goes back to systems thinking. If you're engaging with a company that creates a great system that enables you to make a great impact, you're going to be very, very satisfied with the work. And then with the time that you recapture, you're going to deploy that into your local community. If you're living where you want to live, you're choosing and optimizing and designing your life for that, you will spend more time out in the community. And that's really a great opportunity for workplace culture. A good example that I give people on converting the Zoom happy hour is this notion of a community impact outing. And I thought this up while I was at GitLab, and I saw a lot of companies going into the Zoom happy hours without thinking it through. I advise people to take that same hour. Let's say you have a 1,000-person organization. It's the same 1,000 hours of sunk cost. But instead of forcing people into a virtual platform to talk about the weather, you deploy them into their local communities and say, do whatever you want that fills you up for that hour. Maybe that's reading in a local library, volunteering in a food. I'm an adoptive dad. I'm going to go try to spend time in the field of adoption. If you want to wear company swag, maybe take a selfie or video of yourself and then share that back. And what you do is you build genuine, authentic connections. So in the example I just gave, I've had numerous people reach out to me and they've said things like, hey, we're considering adopting. It's amazing that you're engaged with that. Would you mind if I have a coffee chat and you share your story? These are real, genuine connections that I think you would be hard pressed to formulate in the typical office environment. But again, it goes back to building the systems, creating the psychological safety for things like this to happen. The one other point I'll I'll close on this topic with is that increasingly, I think employee experience leaders will need to understand that people will choose roles and systems based on seasons of life. So I could totally see that there are some early career individuals who maybe don't have a spouse, they don't have any pets, they're not particularly tied to a certain piece of geography. Perhaps right out of university, they really want to be in and out of an office every single day. And I think there will be companies that service that season of life. And then there will be other companies that service different seasons of life. I think this is an entirely new way of looking at the career journey or an employee life cycle. And companies will have to adjust to this. And it will, of course, go back to what systems that they build to cater to those different seasons.
Yeah, we've talked about those same seasons. And I, too, am a father, two daughters. One of my criteria, I would love to keep serving in the Air Force. And I truly appreciate those that continue to, that are parents, that are have their children, that are relocating them constantly, missing and sacrificing on behalf of their country and the mission. And I think sometimes in our industry, we just, then that becomes an expectation. And while we appreciate and respect the folks that are willing to do that, that doesn't mean that that's what everyone is feeling in their season of life. And we've said the same thing. SpaceX, it was famous for knowing that you were going to work 60 to 80 hour work weeks. Now, were you going to get really educated? Yes, you're going to get some incredible skilled opportunities. But at some point, well, so I do want to have a family. How do I then make that family integrate with my work? And we've talked so much about integrating work into our life and not the other way around. And I think there is a growing cohort of folks that say there are now more opportunities than ever where I now can make that happen. Whereas before, the only way I could make a living, the only way I could make a wage was to allow those things all to be second to my employment and the fact that I'm getting a paycheck. And I think the folks that are holding on to that and using that as kind of like a carrot or a stick either way are the ones that are missing the larger picture here. And I think the longer they hold on to that feeling that they've got the money and they've got the opportunity, so therefore they get to dictate the rules, are kind of missing the point of what you're saying right now.
Not only missing the point, but missing the opportunity. Like, this is fertile ground to build something different. We all have a permission slip to do it, but that window is not going to stay open for long. Soon the expectation will be, if you don't provide a great workplace experience, no matter where I'm at or what time of the day I prefer to work, there will be other employers that do this better. And I actually have some stats to back this up, but recently LinkedIn pointed out that 50% of all job applications now are for remote roles. So although only about 20% of the roles flowing in designate as remote, half of all of their applications are going to that 20%. So that tells me that talent is demanding flexibility. Owl Labs just did an awesome state of remote work report, and they found that 80% of teams they surveyed will identify as hybrid or remote in 2023. Not 5 or 10 years in the future, this year. That's how they're going to identify, which means they're going to build tooling and systems to enable that type of work. And the last thing I'll mention is a study from Gartner. They found that if you have a combination of three different things, those three things being flexible work, intentional collaboration, and empathy-based management, if you have those three things within an org, they found that productivity was up almost 4x. Now, that's very rare to find all three of those things, but it is the blueprint for organizations going forward. If you can build those three things into how you work, the numbers will prove themselves out.
So, but that, I mean, in the past, as opposed to looking at that data and bringing those elements together, it's been more about ping pong tables and beer taps, right?
In the season, that was the thing to do. But the truth is, COVID has exposed people to a very different way of living. And look, going on a hike with your son at 3 p.m. on a Thursday, you'll take that over a ping pong table every time.
And you can have treadmill desks at your home as well.
This is true. And look, we could all buy ping pong tables and put them in our garage. It would just be the ones that we preferred.
Hey, so Darren, let's say that we all buy into this remote work experience going forward, right? So what about all these companies that have bought buildings and invested in all this actual physical space? What do they do with it?
The transition will be tough for some organizations. I've seen a few great examples of doing this well. A couple of organizations have divested of the real estate that they reasonably could, but they had very long leases on a few buildings around the world. And so they intentionally chose to re-architect those buildings in a way that would not be an advantage for people who happen to live near them. And so what they did was they created experiential centers. And so now, if they have certain colleagues or partners from around the world and they want to take them on a showcase of what the company is, the awards they've won, what does culture look like in the flesh? How could we build a physical representation of our culture? That's what they're doing with these spaces, their experiential spaces. I think that's a fascinating way to repurpose it. Some organizations are taking the approach of serving the local community that it's in. So I know of a few organizations that have converted massive amounts of space to community centers, and they basically handed it over to the local education institutions. And they've opened it up for underserved individuals of all ages to get their GED, to come learn, to have hands-on experience in a way that they may not otherwise have access to. This is amazing. This is tying corporate and social responsibility. They already have the real estate. They have partners that would love to work with them to repurpose this space to serve an underserved community. Those are just two of the things that I've seen this far. The point is, there are really smart people in the real estate and experiential world that would love nothing more than for these organizations to take the millstone off of the office's neck and enable it to be something bigger, better, and different.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's going to be the time for us today. We could be talking about this for a long time. I'd love to do more of these with you, Darren. It's been fantastic. For me, a key takeaway from today's discussions, it's easy to think of remote working as simply a shift of where you work, but it's important to discuss the implications of this change within the context of cities, as just Vic was saying, infrastructures we've talked about, the ecosystem in general. Remote work's not just an organizational shift, but rather transformational opportunity and design, intentional design, to alter not only how we work, but how we live as a whole and integrate that work into our lives. But for me personally, I love when you talk about purpose portfolio. And that's really something that's key in our life as well. Just because our season in life changed, where we wanted to make sure we had agency over our choices so we could make those choices to be with our children when we wanted to be with them at whatever time that was, and we didn't want someone else making that decision for us. I know that sounds like a big ask, but that's an expectation that we had and a goal that we had set, that we would have that ability and flexibility. But that didn't mean that I didn't want to still contribute, right? And I still had purpose and I wanted to invest and take advantage of the investments other people have made in me up to this point, right? And I didn't just want to walk away. But if you make it hard and make it binary and a choice, and your only choice is between your family or work, and you have the ability to choose your family, you're losing access to some folks that would rather be engaged. And certainly people that, like I said, still have purpose, still have energy, enthusiasm, passion for what they want to contribute. So when we talk about the investing in work as an asset and having employers and organizations look at that, that is such a key piece for me for what you talked about today that I'm certainly going to take away and take forward in our messaging. Vic, what about you?
Definitely, I agree with you, Tom. I think I also took away that it's not so much about, we spoke about the ping pong tables and the head mills. It's not so much about the novelty of flexibility, but it's also about the employee well-being. And on the organizational side, it's about resilience and increasing productivity. So it's an opportunity to unlock some potential that we haven't really been leveraging. And connected to that, I heard from Darren that there's an importance behind this designing for a distributed workforce. So there's the, again, going back to that resilience concept, hiring people with different lived experiences, especially because, like our team, we're working on complex systems. So it's very much a part of that that we need a diverse workforce to bring those diverse perspectives in. So distributed workforce and remote definitely makes sense there. And the other part that I liked was the concept of remote as a product. So you mentioned science and the technology as well, right? So on the employee side, again, hiring for values versus the culture, and then on the HR side, hiring remote architect, someone who actually knows how to do this, so chief of remote, for example.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much we obviously covered and we can continue to discuss. Before we wrap, though, Darren, is there one piece of advice you'd like our listeners to come away from this discussion from your point of view?
I would say that if you're a leader, now is the opportunity to invest in this. This is a brief window of opportunity to really audit all of your workflows, your culture, your values, and hire someone to steward the change for you and really advance your organization into the future and embrace it through the lens of opportunity instead of fear. And if you're an individual and a lot of this resonates with you, I would encourage you to take stock of your current life and leverage the opportunity to design it to be something different. Maybe that's optimizing where you live to be near your parents if they're getting older. They can have in-home elder care. I've known an individual that moved 3,000 miles to be next door to the hospital that was built for the illness that his child had. These are true empowering lifestyle decisions that you can optimize for. And now there's so much remote proliferation in the workforce, you can find an organization that is values aligned and is pioneering that future. A lot of organizations need people to raise their hand and say, I want to be a part of the solution. I want to be a part of challenging the status quo, testing and piloting new tools and new workflows. So if that's you, raise your hand in your organization. Chances are your leaders are looking for you to help steward that change.
Fantastic. Well, Vic, Darren, thank you both for joining us today. Fantastic episode. Join us for future episodes that explore technological advances and structural patterns that will help us better innovate, operate, and navigate in our increasingly connected world. Please subscribe to this podcast at Ecosystemic Futures, and you can learn more about what we're talking about at shoshinworks.com. Thanks again, Darren, Vic. Have a great day, everyone.